537-1350 to call us here on Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson with you. Mitch Fortner running the show as well. The big news of the day, Bill Snyder has confirmed some of the speculation about his health. He has been diagnosed with throat cancer, but the prognosis is excellent. He expects to be back in time to coach spring practice, which starts on March 29th. And then co-offensive coordinator Del Miller announced his retirement. So K-State with a couple openings on the coaching staff now, with a 10th full-time coach being allowed likely by the NCAA for this next season as well. We didn't get a chance to talk any basketball in the open, so we'll do so now. K-State goes down at the hands of West Virginia on Saturday by a final of 85-66. Definitely a tale of two halves type of game. K-State found out before the game that DJ Johnson was not going to be able to go after he had rolled his ankle in the Kansas game towards the end of it, and that certainly did take a toll. It seemed like more so in the second half when K-State was really worn down, but tied 34-34 at half, outscored by 19 in the second.
Well, pretty simple, really. It was a tale of two halves, and I think you can look at the turnovers even more so than probably the shooting percentage as the tale of the ball game. In that first half, you're tied at 34. I thought K-State's focus was good. Their energy was good. They had minimal turnovers. Second half, took bad shots, turned the ball over 13 times, made 7 out of 20 shots from the floor. And I think part of it was fatigue, some of it probably some frustration, frankly. And they just didn't shoot or play well in the second half. I don't know if everybody looks at it the way I look at it, but I felt like even though K-State scored there after the technical foul on the West Virginia bench, / Bob Huggins, that the game turned in their favor, there being West Virginia, at that particular point. Did you see it that way?
Well, they scored 8 straight after it and wound up closing the game on a 49-27 run. So, yeah, after K-State had pulled ahead 39-36 after the free throws from the technical there, that was really, if you want to pinpoint something, where West Virginia was able to get it going. And, you know, unfortunately, there's just so many areas that losing DJ Johnson shows up when you look down the box score and the stat sheet.
Yeah.
He had 14-8 the first meeting between those two teams, so he had some success against them. But K-State gets out-rebounded 47-26. You know, so a plus 21 edge on the glass. Obviously, he's huge for West Virginia. They outscored K-State 50-18 points in the paint, 25-9 points off turnovers, 15-2 second chance points. And those 50 points in the paint, the most actually K-State had given up in the Bruce Weber era here at K-State. So that's some of the carnage that comes when you are missing a guy like DJ Johnson, who I've been arguing all season is the most valuable player on this team.
Well, if he's not the MVP, he's right at the top on a team that's we've described it all year long is pretty balanced, versatile, whatever, little of both. But DJ's he's the center. He is the center of it when you talk about just the energy and passion that he brings to the floor every night. And I think they miss that. You know, I personally would tell you, John, I think the 50-18 points in the paint is a little bit deceiving, because I think a lot of it is because DJ wasn't in there, but I think a lot of it was, in particular in the second half, K-State gave up a lot of layups in transition, too. They really did. And those are points in the paint, right or wrong. So I would say it was more towards K-State's poorer play in the second half as opposed to DJ. But, I mean, it goes without saying you're going to miss the guy, because he's one of your main cogs, no doubt about it.
It was interesting. After the Kansas game, Bruce Weber did get asked about it, and he seemed to think at the time that it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Right.
I hope that this is not the type of thing that lingers, but do we have much of an update on what DJ's condition is?
I really don't today, because they were just kind of getting going when I started to head over here. But I'm quite certain that he's been rehabbing since we got back from Morgantown Saturday night. You certainly hope that it's a good thing that we're playing Wednesday, albeit the early game, as opposed to, say, Tuesday. So hopefully that will be somewhat an advantage. But I think there was a little bit more pain there for him than I think even he thought there was going to be. Not to give too many secrets away here, but I kind of was concerned about it Friday, at the practice Friday, because he really was doing more work on the side than in practice. But I've seen him do that before, so it wasn't like this major red flag, you know what I'm saying? But then you could really start to tell when he tried it in the warmups. It just was quite painful for him, and he just couldn't go, simply stated.
Yeah, that's one of those guys that, you know, it's not anything real minor, you know, or there had to be a lot of pain. He's a tough guy, I guess is my point. You know, you'd expect him to be able to fight through a lot, so if he's not able to go, it must be something pretty bothersome.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how you felt about it, but I think Coach Weber had a couple of different options on which way to go with the starter, but the most logical was with the way he went with Xavier Sneed, and he responded with a double-digit game. It probably wasn't his best game, but I think you take 4 out of 8 and 2 out of 5 from 3 in 20 minutes. He had a couple of turnovers, but 10 points and a rebound. But you just miss that energy and that threat. I mean, DJ, even though he's not the world's biggest guy for a five-man, he's in the top 6 or 7 in the league in block shots. He makes steals for a guy who's, you know, 6'9 and 235 or so. Really athletic. He can guard. So that's a big miss. That's a big miss when he's not in the lineup. It just is.
They had to get pretty creative with him out. You know, you were seeing lineups with Austin Budkey, Corby Irvin, Brian Patrick, Barry Brown, and Isaiah Maurice. I think that was the lineup that everybody sort of turned an eye at, that we just hadn't seen anything like that before. They have not been forced into a situation like that. But sometimes when you're playing West Virginia, who's throwing waves and waves out there at you, you almost have to.
I do have to say this, too. I was really proud of Brian Patrick. And, yes, it had something to do with the fact that he shot the ball so well, but it was more than that. I thought he really competed. I think he was really trying to follow the game plan on both ends of the floor. This is a young guy that it's obvious that he'd like to be getting more playing time. And Saturday he got some pretty darn good minutes, and I thought he really responded to have 11 points in 18 minutes and shoot the ball like that and give that kind of a contribution. He turned the ball over just one time. I thought he did an admirable job. I really did.
Yeah, he wound up playing 18 minutes. I mean, he had only played in a couple of Big 12 games before that. Uh-huh. It had been 8 games, I believe it was, since he had been out on the floor. So got to give him credit just for being ready. You know, I mean, it's tough to be ready for your opportunity, but he was 4-4 from the floor, 3-3 from three-point range. The question now becomes with Brian Patrick, do you try and work him in more? Is that enough for him now to start inching his way into that rotation, which has been basically 7 or 8 guys the entire season?
Well, I think you hope that he will, even if it's just another 3 or 4 minutes, just because I think it helps you that much more with his ability to, A, score the ball, and, B, give those other guys some rest. I mean, you look at some of the numbers here. I'll pull out my stat sheet and look here. But, you know, you got Wesley Owundu playing 31 minutes a game, Kamau Stokes 33 minutes a game, Barry Brown 32 minutes a game. Those are the big three, basically. And DJ's at 26 and a half, 27 minutes. That's quite a few. So if you can give – you know, one of those guys, say a Barry Brown, who can also, he's a combo guard, he can play a little bit of point, so you can mix and match a little bit there, and maybe you can give Kamau and Barry another minute or two off. It makes a big difference if you can do that. Sometimes you can't.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I would think at this point, especially if you're going to have to be shorthanded at all with DJ anymore, I mean, it just bumps everybody up a notch there, and you may have to use him a little bit on Wednesday against Iowa State. K-State will play the Cyclones at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. Then they go to Austin, Texas to take on the Longhorns on Saturday. So that's the week coming up.
Big week.
It's going to be a big week for this team that likely has to go at the very least 3-3 down the stretch and perhaps 4-2 as well. We'll look in hour two at where they're at in bracketology and start looking on down the road for the K-State men after losing a couple games last week. But when we come back here on Wildcat Insider, K-State baseball, believe it or not, fires up this Friday. They start in Kissimmee, Florida. Ohio State first out of the chute for the Wildcats, but we'll get the thoughts of Brad Hill. K-State head coach, had a chance to talk with him late last week about the start of the 2017 baseball season. This is Wildcat Insider.